Good morning, church. My name is John Seibert, and I am the president and chief operating officer of City Square. City Square is a faith-based nonprofit in Dallas, Texas. We fight the causes and effects of poverty through service, advocacy, and friendship with our neighbors. We have about 130 employees. Our budget's grown to about $15 million a year. We fight poverty on all fronts. We do hunger relief. We have a food pantry that serves thousands of neighbors every year. We also have an after-school and summer meal program where we serve kids who qualify for free and reduced lunch during the school year. We'll serve about 1 million meals a year. And in the summer, we serve them in Dallas, Houston, Austin, Waco, San Antonio. We were even in Denver, Colorado last summer. We have a law firm, public interest law firm, that has four attorneys, primarily help mamas and kiddos. We have a medical clinic. It's a fully functioning medical home in partnership with Baylor Healthcare System in Dallas. We have multiple employment training programs. We manage or have developed over 1,400 units of housing in Dallas. That's 1,400 homeless folks that we've helped have a roof over their head. We have a thrift store where we take stuff and turn it into cash to go into our programs, which is really important work for us. We have case managers who work with our neighbors to help them overcome barriers to self-sufficiency. We do financial coaching and financial empowerment. We do a lot of advocacy work on behalf of our neighbors, making sure they have a voice in our community. We have a big AmeriCorps program where we'll have 80 year-round AmeriCorps members, about 320 in the summer, which is kind of the domestic version of the Peace Corps. Many of those AmeriCorps members come from ACU, because we've developed a big partnership with ACU. We have a 15-story building downtown, and on the second floor, there's a campus that's called ACU at City Square. And so Abilene Christian students don't have to wait till they graduate to change the world. They can come help us change it while they're in school and bring their discipline of study to bear on our work. So we have multiple different departments and degree programs developing with Abilene Christian University, and we're really excited about that. For example, ACU started a dietetics internship, a graduate-level internship with us. And so their dietitians get to be embedded at our clinic or in our food pantry, in DISD and other parts of the city, working with low-income populations on health and nutrition and wellness. That's just one of countless expressions of the work of Abilene Christian in our work. So that's a little bit of the context from which I come, the work I do every day. But don't worry, before that I was a preacher for 10 years, so I've done this before. So we ought to be all right for the next 2 weeks. I want to begin by talking about a guy named Judas. Most of you have heard of this guy. He was one of Jesus's 12 disciples. He's the one nobody names their kid after. There aren't very many Judases in the nursery. He's the one who betrayed Jesus, who turned him over to his enemies. Betrayed Jesus for a pot of silver. Money that he never cashed in. He died soon after. Killed himself. Hung himself from a tree. Then there's another guy, a guy named Peter. A lot of people name their kids Peter. Peter even has churches named after him. Peter is one of the heroes of the New Testament, the mouthpiece in Acts 2 on the day of Pentecost, the one who God speaks to in dreams about expanding the kingdom to the Gentiles. The one who encounters Cornelius. Peter is as much a hero of the faith as Judas is a villain. But at the end of John's gospel, there is no difference between Judas and Peter. In that garden of Gethsemane, Judas turns Jesus over, and Peter draws his sword to fight back. even cuts a guy's ear off. And then Jesus says, no, 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 Peter. My kingdom will not come through violence. Jesus heals the man's ear. And Jesus passively goes as a criminal with the authorities. And maybe something just snapped in Peter at that moment when Jesus refused to be a man and fight. Maybe it was fear. Fear of being the next one arrested. Or maybe it was just disappointment that Jesus wasn't the man he thought he was. He wasn't the king he thought he was following. He wasn't going to establish his rule and reign by violent revolution. Whatever happened in that moment caused Peter to just stand by and watch. Three different times, he's asked, aren't you a friend and follower of Jesus? And he says, nope. Me? Man, you've got the wrong guy. I don't know that man. No, you, aren't you one of the ones that was with the Galilean? No. I get that a lot, but not me. I've never known the man. You, aren't you a follower of Jesus? No. I have never met him. Wrong guy. You see, on Jesus' road to the cross, there's more than one betrayer. Theologians describe this in two categories of sin, that there are sins of commission. These are the bad things we do. But then there are also sins of omission. Good things we choose not to do. Judas is our poster child for sins of commission. And Peter is a poster child for sins of omission. Both are deniers of Jesus. Both betray Jesus on the way to the cross. They are no different. But poor, poor Judas. He gets the bad press, doesn't he? And if you listen to the way we tell the story, it's like Judas is just a stock character. He's nothing more than a puppet that God needs to use, a mechanism to get Jesus to the cross, that somehow God doesn't care about what happens to Judas. And Judas believes this. He looks at his life, he looks at his failure, he looks at his betrayal, and he sees no hope. He sees no future. He sees no way out. He ends up taking his own life. I wish I could have stopped him. I wish I could have helped Judas believe the good news he had helped Jesus share with others. I wish he could have believed in a grace greater than his own sin. Because really, think about it. What do you think Jesus would have said to Judas the next time he saw him? Would Jesus have just poured condemnation upon him? Would Jesus have banished him to hell? Would Jesus have rejected the one who rejected him? Oh, we have a hunch what Jesus would have done, don't we? Because we remember the words we heard from the cross. Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. One thing we know about Jesus, if we really know Jesus, is that His love is always greater than our worst failure. And Jesus would have done what Jesus always does. Restored what was broken. Offered forgiveness. Offered new life. Made a way where there seemed to be no way. We know what would have happened if Jesus and Judas could have met one more time. There would be another hero in the book of Acts, wouldn't there? There would be little boys running around in the nursery named Judas. Because he would have experienced the restoring, redeeming love of God that God made known to us in Jesus Christ. And that, church, is the only way that Peter is different than Judas. Peter had enough hope to believe that his momentary acts of rebellion, his moment of denial, did not have to be the culminating event of his story. It did not have to define the rest of his life. No, Peter sticks around, doesn't he? He sticks around to hear the word from the women who've gone to the tomb that the stone is rolled away. He's not there. He's risen, just as he said. He stuck around to see the risen Lord who had conquered death and sin. He sticks around to even have this amazing encounter at the end of John's gospel, where he and Jesus have breakfast together. And in that amazing moment, Jesus looks him in the eye and says, "Peter, do you love me?" "Yes, Lord, you know I love you. Feed my sheep." "Peter, son of John, do you love me?" "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Feed my lambs." "Peter, do you love me?" "Yes, Jesus, I love you. Tend to my sheep, Peter. Be a good shepherd in the name of the good shepherd." I don't think it's an accident or a coincidence that Jesus asked Peter three times if he loved him. There's one question for every denial, isn't there? Jesus wants to make sure that Peter knows Peter's not one-third forgiven. Peter is not 66.6% redeemed. Peter is completely and totally 100% restored. He leaves fully forgiven. And having experienced the amazing love of God, Peter is unleashed to do God's work in the world. He is free to serve. And perhaps, church, this is really what qualifies us to serve. You're not qualified to serve if somehow you've managed to never need the love of God in your life. Being qualified to serve is not batting 1,000 in the morality category. No, it's experiencing the redeeming, restoring love of God in the midst of your failures and your brokenness. What qualifies us to serve is that all of us deny Jesus at some point. And all of us find ourselves not one-third forgiven, not two-thirds redeemed, but fully restored. My dad always had a saying that the worst things are never the last things. Well, there are too many people walking around in this town that haven't heard that powerful truth. There are too many Judases who, once their life becomes a failure, who once they can't handle everything, who once they mess up, who once they no longer bat 1,000, think there is no hope, there is no future, and there is definitely no place for them among the people of God. And too often they are given that message from the assembled people of God. Too often they are not met with grace and redemption and restoring love. Too often they get a different message, a message that's not the message of Jesus, a message of exclusion and a message of condemnation and a message of judgment and a message of rejection. Too many people in our communities are desperately longing to have breakfast with Jesus so they can experience full forgiveness. They're just not sure they're going to get it from us. And so they need to know what we know about them, that they're not really Judas, they're Peter. They are heroes of God just waiting to be called back into service by God's powerful, redeeming love. And here's one of the amazing things about how God works. Sometimes God's best work comes through our failures, through our brokenness, through our pain, through our adversity. I experienced this powerfully when I was in college. The summer between my sophomore and junior years, I did a chaplaincy internship at MD Anderson Cancer Center. And that was a tough summer for a 20-year-old college kid. And the flannel graph Jesus I knew as a child no longer worked, and I had to get a bigger God. And it was very disorienting. But in the midst of that, I was able to have mentors, guides. And one of those guides was the pillow lady, Marie Bannister. Marie was a volunteer who was a cancer survivor. She walked with a limp, the limp that she acquired in her battle with cancer. But Marie would go around to area churches collecting nylons that she would use to stuff into little pillows that she would sew for the cancer patients. And she would limp around with a little cart and pass out pillows to patients. And so she was known as the pillow lady. Here's what Marie's brokenness and pain of cancer taught her. Hospital beds are extremely uncomfortable. And you never can quite get situated just right to actually be able to sleep. And what you need is just like a little pillow to put right under your back or right behind your neck. And so the pillow lady came by and gave you that pillow. And so time after time after time, I would go in to visit patients. And I would say, well, how are you doing today? Oh, so much better today. I actually slept last night. This pillow lady came by, gave me a pillow, and that's the best rest I've had in a month. Her body's failure, called cancer, her brokenness as a cancer patient became her area of expertise, became fuel for ministry. Because you see, Marie wasn't Judas. She was Peter. What qualifies us for ministry is not never needing the love of God, but fully receiving it. And you can't freely give it till you fully received it. You and I, we're no different than Judas, are we? But by the grace of God, we're no different than Peter, either. I think that's pretty great news. That our pain and our brokenness and our failures do not disqualify us from ministry. Those are the qualifications of God's most faithful servants. I hope more Judases in this town will hear that good news and will be offered God's free, restoring love. I hope broken people can come here and find that there is hope and there is a future and that their worst failure is not the last chapter of their story. The worst things are never the last things. There is a future, and God's love is greater than our sin. If you need to receive that gift today, come as we stand and sing.